listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Welcome once again to the Across the Pondcast, the almost daily audio review of all things at the All England Club. I'm Ed McGrogan. Thank you for stopping by once again. Today we are reviewing the semifinals, both in the men's and the women's side. We just got finished watching Roger Federer beat Andy Murray in easily one of Federer's, in my opinion, one of the best matches he's played, period, and certainly one of, if not the best match that he's played, you know, over the last 5 years, where we've watched Federer, you know, since 2010, since his run of major wins definitely came to an end, at least, you know, streaks of wins in early 2010. We've seen a mixed bag from Federer at the majors altogether. We've seen Federer struggle really for the first time at the Slams. You know, his semifinal streak ended at Roland Garros years ago to Robin Soderling, and really ever since that was taken, you know, ever since the toothpaste was let out of the toothpaste dispenser there, we've, you know, it hasn't been the great shock to see Roger Federer struggle, particularly even in the earlier rounds of Slams. We've seen him lose in the second round. We've seen him, you know, to contrast that, we've seen some really great play from Federer at Slams. One thing we haven't really seen, at least in my opinion, is a match like he had today against Murray that, in all seriousness and, you know, without hyperbole, you know, recalled those days from 2004 to 2007, that era that any fan of the game cites as, you know, when we saw Federer at his absolute peak. And today against Murray, to me, was one of those days. It was that day that Federer fans probably have kind of always hoped for. It was, to me, almost a near flawless performance. Even though, of course, this ended 7-5, 7-5, 6-4, you know, that really speaks to, you know, of course, how well Murray played. And I thought Murray played a great, you know, a great, great match here. But it also spoke to how, you know, just the level that Federer had to display to, in spite of all that, beat him in straight sets. You can hardly even remember unforced errors by Federer. There was only 11 of them the whole match. You know, I'll run down really the stats that tell the story. If you didn't catch it, or if you saw it, in a match like this, even after watching it, you look at the stats, and when they still remain that impressive, it's kind of says something. Federer, you know, the big story, and as he said after the match, was his serve. It was a devastating shot to Murray, who, as we all know, is one of the game's best returners. But he, you know, Federer really negated that huge advantage from Murray, and the ability for Murray to make each point a really taxing exercise for Federer. There were plenty of evidences of that at times where we saw those, I think, points that have come to define Murray as such a great player in his own right, where he does his best work. But, you know, when Federer hits 20 aces, when he makes 76% of first serves, when he wins 84% of first serve points, when he offers just one break point, when he's never broken, and when he hits 56 winners to 11 unforced errors, it's a match that, particularly if he goes on to win Wimbledon, that is going to be remembered as, you know, one of the best he's played. I really do mean that, because first off, you know, coming into this with me spewing all these Federer, you know, pions here, remember, I did pick Murray to win this tournament, and early in the first set of this match, I, you know, there were times when I, and not that I have, you know, an interest in this, but I watched that set and I was like, you know, as well as Federer was playing, I was seeing some signs from Murray that kind of led me to make that pick before the tournament. When Murray can dig in and play Federer kind of on his terms, and along this, he's very hard to beat in a long baseline exchange, particularly against Federer, who over the years has not been, simply put, as consistent as he was in those peak years that we talked about. You inevitably saw a forehand that went astray. You know, the backhand in particular, you couldn't expect that to hold up shot after shot. But today, you know, Federer's backhand was tremendous. It was hit hard. It was hit wherever he really wanted to. The slice backhand was there too. That was a big part of this match that shouldn't be overlooked in how well he served. Is the effect that the slice had of sort of putting a different spin on the rallies, and B, the defense that Federer played against Murray. He still had to play a lot of defense in this match. You can say that for returning serve, where the slice, you know, backhand chip, and you know, digging out some wide serves, that was a big part of keeping Murray, you know, tested on service games. He was certainly tested more than Federer was on serve. But overall, it was Federer. Federer pulled the trigger, you know, often, and usually, if it wasn't a winner, it was leading to, you know, a put away at net or sort of a forced error on Murray's side. The big point of this match, of course, was, you know, after we had a first set where it was just one break, you go to the second set, and it's the 5-4 game. Murray serving, and he goes down triple break point, triple set point. At that point, you figure you're giving Federer three chances. You can't imagine Murray is getting out of this okay. He manages to save five set points, in fact, in what was close to a 15-minute game, where we saw, you know, the best tennis from Murray, but this was hardly Federer just choking up on set points. It was, you know, just outstanding tennis from both guys. The one thing to remember about that game, which may be overlooked because there were just so many points in it and so much great shot making overall, was Murray going for a big, not necessarily a big second serve. It caught the line, but it was certainly, you know, not a safe second serve. He, and this is at love 40, he curls it in, a lot of spin, catches the back line, actually aces Federer. But that was an inch, you know, a couple inches from going out and really having that not be the dramatic game that it turned out to be. Eventually Murray ends up holding this, and you certainly had to think that if there was any way that Federer was going to be rattled or the match could turn from what we saw, you know, that type of game had the potential to do it. You know, the crowd, which I thought the crowd was very pro Murray overall. I'm making an observation. I'm not critiquing anything by any means. But throughout the match, I saw, you know, fairly tepid applause early on when Federer won the first set, and you know, you really got the sense that I do think the majority of this crowd was pulling for Murray, and you know, they're gonna be just as much behind Federer in the final against Djokovic, but I did sense more of a Murray support on Friday. But the big thing to me was after that game, Federer holds at love. And if you follow me on Twitter at Ed McGrogan, you know a lot of these points that I made at the moment I'm going to make here. That's the sort of the dirty little secret of many writers and their podcasts. Is you will get a little repeat from the Twitter account, but it makes sense because that's what you're thinking at the moment. That's what you want to expand upon later on. Is I think you can make the argument, certainly have the talk, that the Federer's hold at love after such a tough game to take. You get 5 set points to come and go. It's 15 minutes long. But his holding at love was just as important as Murray, you know, getting out of that jam there. And, you know, wouldn't you know it, the next game after that, Federer finally does break Murray on his 6th set point to win that set 7-5. So, you know, a few minutes earlier, you think that the game after Murray has that miraculous hold, it's going to turn. In fact, it's 2 games later after Federer has a great hold of his own. And, you know, this is still tight all the way to the end, 6-4 in the third. It reminded me of a match that I watched in person at the 2007 U.S. Open where, you know, this was I saw Federer at one of his best matches for sure. He beat Roddick 7-6, 7-6, 6-2 at the Open, where Andy Roddick threw everything he had at Federer. He, you know, there was no breaks to serve through 2 sets, just hardly anything between the two guys, and Federer still manages to beat him in straights. Coincidentally, another Andy and somebody's playing in their front of their home crowd. But this match did remind me a little of that, where we saw great tennis from both guys, but we saw Roger Federer at his, you know, at or near his best at 33 years old. And to me, going into the final, there actually is a lot of pressure on Federer. I think that, especially after witnessing this result from the outside perspective, from his own perspective, I think he really feels like he's got to cap this off with that title, the 18th slam that's really eluded him for 3 years now. It was at the 2012 Wimbledon that he last won against Andy Murray. And I think he really feels like he's got to do it. Not that I'm saying that he can't win a major after if he doesn't win on Sunday. I think you'd be absolutely crazy to say that after what you see now. But this is one of the... This is Federer, you know, at this stage of the tournament, Federer has that big win, which often we've seen slams where Federer really mows through about the first 4 or 5 rounds, but just can't do it against one of his main rivals at the end. This, you know, this is a different story. This is him beating Murray, who he was only 12-11 against going into the match. And I think he feels like he's got to cement this with the win in the final. And now, you know, as for Djokovic, who earlier today had no trouble with Richard Gasquet, he had trouble early on, for sure. But this match ended pretty conventionally, like I thought it would. It still surprises me how Stan, after what we've seen from him, was not able to really put Gasquet away in the quarters. But to me, and, you know, some of you, who knows if you're listening or not, but I did make mention the last time on the podcast of how the draw really broke in Djokovic's favor at Wimbledon. You know, to me, there's no argument that. I mean, he got unquestionably an easier semifinal challenge than he would have if he had to play Wawrinka, who, of course, he has so much recent history with. And Djokovic took advantage of that. I mean, this was anything but peak Djokovic, what we saw today. But he got more comfortable as the match went along against Gasquet. For him to get out of that first set, which he won in a tiebreaker, was very important, because, you know, if it does turn into a 4 or 5 set match, you can definitely see Djokovic still winning it, obviously, but you can see it turning into one of these, you know, sort of really difficult Djokovic battles that he has been known for over the years, known for winning too. But you know, to go in at this late stage of the slam, you do want to see, if you're a Djokovic fan, to him to kind of take care of business as he's done, you know, going into what is going to be the toughest match he'll play this week, you would think, against Federer. You know, Djokovic 7-6, 6-4, 6-4. Gasquet, I think, you know, a fantastic run, obviously. But Djokovic, you know, number one versus number two. This is a repeat of last year's final. You know, two of the big four again in the women in final. I've made points about this too, that Wimbledon for me is just, you know, it's the show me event of where things stand in the game. And we're left with Djokovic and Federer, one and two in the world. It's a match that you know, tennis could have only really hoped for, and they get it, and it's a super tough call to make where it goes. It's, yeah, it has to be kind of a pick'em, I would think, at the books in Vegas and places like that. It's gonna be I hope a really good one. It's a huge match for Federer, as I've mentioned. You know, would add to that title, that, you know, that slam record, and would, you know, get him, I think, something that he's been looking for a while. And for Djokovic, you know, he wins this, he goes to nine slams, three Wimbledons. He's, keep in mind, he's reached the past three Wimbledon finals, four of the last five, turning into one of the, you know, the great grass court players, period. It would give him three Wimbledons. It'd give him one over, you know, it'd give him a title defense at the All-England Club, give him two wins there over Federer, who is obviously one of probably the greatest Wimbledon player of all time. There's just so much at stake for both guys here, and you know, we get quite a final to talk up to, look forward to on Sunday. That's where the men's, you know, the men's stand at this point. For the ladies, you know, we have Serena taking on Garbine Muguruza. That was what I thought would happen. You know, I really still didn't think that Maria Sharapova would get blitzed this badly by Serena yesterday on Thursday. You know, just a match, you know, in contrast to Federer and Djokovic, kind of a match you want to see. You know, Maria and Serena at this point is just a match you don't want to see. It just seems like there has been no growth, no sort of, nothing has been building in these matches to even suggest that Sharapova has it against Serena. The, you know, the double faults, which have really sort of characterized her game when it comes to matchups that she has trouble with, those rear their heads again. She had three in the opening game of the match, I believe. Had some very ill-timed ones. There was one down break point. I want to say set point. I'm trying to recall, but I know there was, I think, two of them on break point. And Serena just continues just to make her way toward incredible history here. You know, she's one win away from four slams at once. You know, in the past 10 months, that would be collecting, if you go back to the U.S. Open last year, to go from 17 slams to potentially 21, could tie Graf at the U.S. Open with 22 and complete a calendar year Grand Slam. And there's no reason to pick against that. There's absolutely zero reason to pick against that. It's futile to. It could happen, but you can make almost nothing to back Muguruza. And it's not to say that this match couldn't go three sets. I think there's a very good possibility it could turn out much like the French Open final. In the Serena versus Maria semifinal yesterday, when Serena was closing it out, a few games from the win, I said that it would surprise me. Certainly wouldn't shock me, but it would be surprising if Serena got through this without any sort of drama, because she had, in many of her wins at the majors this year, there's always been this episode of Serena overcoming some adversity, usually late in the match, and she's done it every time. But you know, we didn't really see that against Sharapova. There was a moment where you thought it could go that way in the second set, But I could, you know, I could definitely see that happening against Muguruza, because you know, there's no pressure on Garbine at all, and she can hit a huge ball. She can hit a great forehand. You know, we saw that. You know, we saw that in her semifinal. You know, throughout that one against Radwanska, she, you know, just wiped the court with her to start the match, up a set in 3-1 until things really turned completely. You know, from a set in 3-1, Radwanska wins next six games to go, and then, you know, then we kind of had that match, which eventually, you know, Muguruza goes on to win. But you saw the power that she has. We've seen it against Serena at the French Open last year too. You know, Muguruza, you know, has beaten Serena at a slam. There is a lot to like about Muguruza in this match, no doubt about it. But it would be a colossal, colossal surprise if this was anything but a Serena win. It could be a cakewalk. It could be a very difficult two-setter. It could be a three-setter in any variety. But there's almost no way I don't see Serena, you know, completing this here, and then we're talking about something just extraordinary, as if it hasn't been already for her. You know, Radwanska, for her, this is kind of like Gasquet in my, it was a big, you know, for her stage in her career, this was a, you know, it was a letdown for sure, considering the stage she was at, to not take advantage of a pretty young opponent. However, considering where Radwanska was earlier this year in terms of just her, you know, what she was bringing to the game, this has to be a positive result for her. I think a very positive result for her. And I think the main thing about why I say beyond what Serena can do is, for all that Muguruza has done, she's beaten Serena at a slam, she's played on center court, she's overcome some adversity on center court, she has big shots. She's never played in a Grand Slam final, and I think that is a huge difference when you get to that point. We've seen it many times on the men's side where someone is playing Rafa, Federer, Djokovic. We've seen it on the women's side many times when someone's playing Sharapova or Serena, players that have won multiple slams and have been in this situation many times. It's a totally different juncture, and one that I feel like will kind of hit Muguruza. We'll see how she reacts to it, but I'd be very surprised if Serena didn't A, win the match and also win the first set of the match. I think it can kind of go in a variety of directions from there, but I do expect kind of a quick start from Williams. And from that point, I eventually expect her to win. So with that said, that will wrap up this edition of the Across the Pondcast. You know, like with the semifinals here and the quarterfinals, I'm going to come back for one last one after both finals have wrapped up. I've enjoyed doing these. I'm glad to see some good reception from you guys. We're definitely going to do these during the U.S. Open. I'll probably try to do them a little bit, you know, as I'll be at the Open. We'll definitely have a new name for this, of course, but there's a lot more I can do with it, you know, being at the event. So I'll get brainstorming about that, but this has been good for Wimbledon, glad to give you my thoughts on this outlet on SoundCloud and iTunes. So tune back in next time for the Across the Pondcast. Tweet me any questions you have at Ed McGrogan. EDMCGROGAN, and we'll talk then. Thank you again for listening to Tennis.com.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.